Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, March 15th, 2022. The Ides of March. Yes, the Ides of March. I want to welcome everyone to today's program. Got a great show lineup for you today. I'm going to take the first segment. Got a couple of very important things to go over. And in the second segment, Stan Deo is coming up, so stay tuned for that. Missed Stan the last couple of weeks, but he's back. He's coming back. Of course, those last 2 weeks were my fault. So that said, looking forward to that. Before we get into the program, a little bit of personal a personal plea, if I may. My granddaughter, Maya, I keep thinking of her as 2 years old, 2.5 years old. She's actually 3.5. But to me, she's always going to be that special. But anyway, she's been hospitalized. She has some GI bleeding. And there she is, the sweet little girl on the screen. If I can ask for prayers for Maya, look, folks, I know there's a lot of people out there having a lot of problems, much greater, okay? But boy, I'll tell you what, it just breaks my heart to see my granddaughter in that position. And I thank you in advance for your prayers and your concern. All right. You know, it's tough. It's tough when you see a child like that, or any child like that. All right. So a couple of things. One, somewhat, out of left field, Pennsylvania's former health secretary has been named, now you ready for this, by USA Today, one of the women of the year. Now here is Richard Levine. Pennsylvania's former health secretary has been named one of USA Today's women of the year. Eric the Tech, that's a dude, man. That's a dude, as you say, right?
It's not Halloween yet.
Look. Help me. I don't even know what to say to this. You're right. It's not Halloween, but it's a dude. I've got no words, except come on man. Corn Pop was a bad dude. Maybe that's Corn Pop, I don't know. All right, let's get into some real news though. Some really important news.
The bearded
25 cents in the tent. There you go. You can see. Oh, my word. God forgive us. And I mean that.
You want to just find a toilet and...
Or not.
Throw up your brains out.
or a wicker basket, right? Oh, man. I'm telling you what, I know. I'm not saying anything except stammering and stuttering because I got nothing to say. I got nothing. All right. Listen, watch this video clip. This is about I'm going to address a couple of things here. I'm going to address what's going on in Ukraine on a microcosmic scale. And then a macro scale. I want to address Taiwan and then the greater economic reset. Get all this done really quick. But watch this video clip. This is about biological weapons. Well, a biological weapons expert exposes labs in Ukraine. This is Dr. Francis Boyle. This was on. He was on with Owen Schroyer yesterday, and now he wrote the bioweapons treaty. He worked for a couple of administrations. He knows that of which he speaks. His resume is impressive. But I've got to tell you something. There's something very, very, very wrong here. Not with him, not with what he's saying, but in the larger sense. Now, I've chosen about 3.5 minutes out of a 40-minute interview. Okay? Pay attention to this part, and we're going to build from here. Go ahead and roll it. This would be okay. This, by the way, this is video clip number one. And again, Dr. Francis Boyle, on with Owen Schroyer yesterday, and talking about the presence of the bio labs, as they're called, but bioweapons lab. And don't forget, first they didn't exist. Then it was a conspiracy theory. Then, oh yeah, they do exist as these containment plants. And then they didn't exist. And then now, yeah, they do exist based on Newland's testimony. Victoria Newland, who is a neocon extraordinaire. But pay attention to this, because all of this connects. Go ahead.
As they go to the bank. So that is my interpretation of what's involved here, Owen.
Is it a well-known secret in D.C., in the halls of the elite politicians and the neocon hawks and just the political establishment there, the swamp or the deep state, as it's known? Anthony Fauci's role at the NIH or whatever else he's involved in, is that all just a front? Is Anthony Fauci really the biological weapons chief for America?
Yes, since Reagan put him in power at NIAID, I think it was about 1984 or so, Owen. That's how long I've been fighting against Fauci. And about 95% of this Nazi biowarfare, death science, dirty work has been funded by Fauci, NIAID, and NIH since about 1984. When Reagan and the neocons got into it. As I said, what spurred me into action was a very comprehensive report on the abuse of DNA genetic engineering by the Reagan administration and his neocons to research, develop, test, stockpile for use biological weapons, every type of biological weapon that they could think up with. And indeed now, with synthetic biology that they can concoct. Indeed, the COVID-19, the Bat Queen took a synthetic biology organism from the Wuhan BSL-4, brought it over to the University of North Carolina BSL-3, and then gave it gain-of-function properties under Barrick there, who's an expert on this, and his team. And by the way, the FDA was involved in this too. Now think about that. The FDA that is approving these Nazi Franken shots that are killing people and disabling people was involved in the development of COVID-19. So they've got us on both sides here. Likewise, Walensky, you know, who can't get her story straight either, right? She can't. She comes from the Harvard Medical School. The Harvard Medical School was involved in the development of the COVID-19 biological warfare weapon. Indeed, Harvard was one of the sponsoring institutions of the Wuhan BSL-4. China's fourth teacher. Now think about that for a minute. And indeed, the chair of the Harvard chemical department, chemistry department, Lieber, he was over there too with his own lab specializing in nanotechnology. And Lieber had also worked for the Pentagon, Fort Detrick, nanotechnologizing biowarfare weapons for them. The Amerithrax attack nanotechnology. There you had a trillion spores per gram on Amerithax. I was the first one to blow the whistle on that coming out of a U.S. biowarfare lab and program on November 1, 2001 at our conference for the responsible genetics at Harvard Divinity School. So this type of activity, I had thought that my biological weapons anti-terrorism act would put an end to this, but it didn't. It made no difference. There was too much money involved and too many completely unprincipled people like Tony Fauci with a Nazi mentality here. And again, I don't really follow professional athletics, but I think these guys have it right. We have to resist Nazi medical tyranny. There is no other word for what is going on in this country today. And I commend these athletes for using their celebrity power to bring this out to a broader audience in the American people, certainly that I can as a mere law professor.
All right. All right. That picture was of Fauci and Ralph Baric at the end. The thing I was most taken with, obviously, was the fact that the acknowledgement of the bioweapons laboratories under Fauci. Fauci, not some scientific marvel, all right? Not some diagnostic hero, but a guy in charge of a bioweapons program. And if you take that, and if you take the... Eric the Tech's over here messing with my microphone. You touched my microphone. All right, Eric. Thank you. And you can keep that up there, by the way, that picture. But if you take, for example, RFK's book, RFK Jr.'s book about the real Anthony Fauci, and you take a look at what Fauci was doing back in the 80s with AIDS, and to me this is extremely important, and you look at what he had done with AIDS to the extent, and I would characterize it as this, if you read RFK Jr.'s book, he weaponized the autoimmune deficiency syndrome, disease. He weaponized it. All right? And there's an entire chapter plus in RFK Jr.'s book. So when you think about that and you think about all of the other pieces of the puzzle that come together with respect to the bioweapons program, to me, okay, we've got more than a smoking gun in Ukraine. Now, let's go to page 2. This is this further proves, and I showed this before, but this is from the National Pulse. And for those listening on the radio, exclusive deleted web pages show Obama led an effort to build a Ukraine-based biolab handling, in quote, especially dangerous pathogens. Now, does that sound, for example, like a bioweapon or a biolab containment facility? No, no. This is more offensive, on the offensive part. And keep that up if you don't mind, because I think that this is extremely important to really understand. Now, meanwhile, okay, so in this time period, around the time Ukraine began getting hot most recently, and of course the present, the U.S. Embassy quietly deleted all Ukraine bioweapons lab documents online. And there's been a media blackout because of it. The U.S. Embassy in Ukraine, they abruptly deleted all of their bioweapons lab documents from the official website. This happened last Friday. This amid Russia's ongoing special military op in the country. So within 24 hours, all references, all PDF files, all pages from the embassy website were deleted. Now, you might think, and by the way, they were removed without any explanation whatsoever. Of course they were. So you might think, well, okay, so what? Well, innocent people don't act like this. Now, Eric the Tech, on page 3, I believe I sent this to you. Page 3. Check this out, folks, for those following by way of video. U.S. Embassy quietly deletes all Ukraine bioweapons lab documents, as I stated. Now, if you scroll down there below the black box, the big black, keep going a little more. Okay, you see those links right there where it says, thankfully, all of the documents were archived by internet sleuths. And there they are. Eric Tech, can you click on one, like the first one, for example? Are you able to do that and have it show on screen? Let's find out. Let's see what happens. It's loading. That's a good sign. Now, these are archived of the documents that were scrubbed. All right. And here it comes. Let me see if I can do it myself. The reason I really would like you to take a look at this, and we're going to keep this up for a little bit, because this is one of many. I want you to take a look at the... first of all, the donor, okay, of this fact sheet, the donor with respect to who's responsible for setting these labs up, the Department of Defense of the United States of America. Now, what does that tell you? Does that tell you that this is a research lab for like a cancer research? No. If it falls under the Department of Defense, then it has an entirely different purpose. Now, the other part as well, some familiar names, if you look at the various entries on this sheet, you're going to find some common names in all of these papers or pages that were expunged, including the integrating contractor Black and Veatch. That's a company out of Kansas City, Missouri. Dig a little deeper there. That's all I'm saying. Just dig a little deeper there. I'm not describing anything at all. I'm just saying dig. Okay. I'm not saying a word. I'm just saying it's interesting. I find this very interesting. At the very least, interesting. All right. Now, yesterday, I did play a little bit about the larger issue of Ukraine. And one of my favorite people who really knows about this is Professor John Mersheimer. Now, this is a 2-minute video clip. I really want to play this again, because I want to reinforce the information that he shares in this particular clip. If you don't mind, this is video 2, and this is a professor talking in September 2015, talking about what the United States and the West is doing against Russia. Extremely important. Go ahead and play clip or video 2.
What's going on here is that the West is leading Ukraine down the primrose path. And the end result is that Ukraine is going to get wrecked. And I believe that the policy that I'm advocating, which is neutralizing Ukraine and then building it up economically and getting it out of the competition between Russia on one side and NATO on the other side, is the best thing that could happen to the Ukrainians. What we're doing is encouraging the Ukrainians to play tough with the Russians. We're encouraging the Ukrainians to think that they will ultimately become part of the West, because we will ultimately defeat Putin and we will ultimately get our way. Time is on our side. And of course, the Ukrainians are playing along with this, and the Ukrainians are almost completely unwilling to compromise with the Russians and instead want to pursue a hardline policy. Well, as I said to you before, if they do that, the end result is that their country is going to be wrecked. And what we're doing is, in effect, encouraging that outcome. I think it would make much more sense for us to work to create a neutral Ukraine. It would be in our interest to bury this crisis as quickly as possible. It certainly would be in Russia's interest to do so. And most importantly, it would be in Ukraine's interest to put an end to the crisis.
Well, I'll tell you, that's an extremely important assessment, and it's part of a larger, much larger lecture he's given. Actually, he's given two or three, and he's been really accurate, his entire assessment. This goes back into the color, well, the coup, the Obama, Jarrett, Newland, and our intelligence community coup, sponsored coup back in 2014. In Ukraine, all right? This goes back, and it goes back even further than that, but understand what we are trying to do. Now, I was confused, and folks, maybe you saw this, maybe you didn't. I have a good friend who contacted me and said, hey, did you hear Lieutenant General Thomas McInerney on with Brandon House yesterday? And I got a call, Brandon. Because McInerney was saying, look, you know, the Russians, they're kind of getting bogged down, getting beat. They didn't expect such resistance. Well, I'll tell you what, that's not the information I'm getting. And Jim Rickards, which we played yesterday, I don't have time to play him today, was saying, look, this column that's coming from the north that's supposedly stalled, well, wait a second. This is a three-pronged attack. That's one prong. And they're waiting for the other two prongs to catch up. And I think there's lies on every side, all sides, both sides, all sides. There's lies everywhere, propaganda everywhere. And by the way, you speak up on behalf of Russia or on behalf of the Russian, if you even analyze the Russian side of things, oh, man. I mean, I've gotten emails, people threatening to cancel me. So I can imagine what it's just, well, it's crazy. But what about in because of time, I want to just get right into this. There's issues with Taiwan and China. And everyone really needs to pay attention to what is being telegraphed by Biden, by this regime, and how they're handling, for example, Ukraine, or not handling it, in Taiwan. The real threat here, I believe, is Taiwan. China going against Taiwan. Now, the president of China is due for election this fall, going for a third term. The timing, I believe, is critically important. So watch Taiwan. But again, in the interest of time, let's take a larger step back. With respect to Taiwan and China, with respect to really what's going on in the with Ukraine, with Russia and China, and this will affect Taiwan as well. There's a larger economic thing happening. You know, the U.S. dollar, for example, is only the U.S. dollar is only the reserve currency because we guarantee the free flow of shipment of oil throughout the world. When that stops to be the case, as it's happening right now, there's going to be a day of reckoning coming where the U.S. dollar will not be the world's reserve currency any longer, all right? So keep that in mind as you watch this next clip. It's 3 minutes, and this is the coming Eurasian alliance that speaks to the economic coming economic woes here in the United States. Watch this.
Breaking news. Members of the Eurasian Economic Union and China will develop a project for an independent international monetary and financial system. That's just breaking news. What does that mean, Steve Cortez, to our audience?
Well, what it means is, and we've spoken about this a lot on this show, I've written about it a lot in my Substack, what Joe Biden is right now jeopardizing is a century, literally a century, of the hegemony, the supremacy, the primacy of the United States dollar. King dollar has reigned the world over. All important transactions in the world occur in United States dollars. Why? Because the dollar was backed by the full faith and credit of the people of the United States and protected also by the supremacy of the United States military, the superiority of the U.S. military. All of that has been put in jeopardy by this weaponization of money against Russia, and not against Putin or against the oligarchs, but against regular working class people in Russia who have seen the value of their rubles and their purchasing power collapse in recent weeks. An unprecedented weaponization of money by Biden. One of the risks, one of the main consequences may well be that we are literally propelling, we are compelling the rest of the world to find currency alternatives because they cannot operate at the whim of the United States, and knowing that they can be essentially debanked, they can be de-dollarized at the stroke of a pen by somebody like Joe Biden. So unfortunately, I think the more subtle message in Xi perhaps taking his first foreign trip since the CCP virus was unleashed on the world from Wuhan, his first foreign trip, according to Wall Street Journal, is going to be to where? To Riyadh, because there is an emerging alliance on the Eurasian landmass: India, China, Saudi Arabia, Moscow. Now, that's a very complex alliance, and there are a lot of nuances to it and a lot of internal conflicts to that alliance. But the point is, all of them now have a vested interest in not operating in dollars. And that matters to regular Americans, even if you don't care about international affairs, because King Dollar has kept, until Biden, has kept inflation contained here for the last 40 years. And that is no longer the case.
Bug or feature? Is that a bug or is that a feature? Is that an intended consequence? I do think it is, considering the great reset, the reset, the economic reset, and the coming digital dollar. And I believe that's going to be sooner rather than later. A lot of things to think about. When you look at the biolabs, when you look at the Ukraine situation, when you look at, and the reason, maybe I should have been a little bit more clear on this, the reason the biolabs are important, the bioweapons lab in Ukraine, we've got them all over the planet. But when you think about the potential for something being released that will enable the globalists to double down, for example, on the jabs and the passports and electronic identification, well, there it is, right there. And it's not that they need an excuse, but a lot of people will buy that excuse. Again, the Great Reset on its way. It's headed this way unless we, the people, stop it. You know, Stan Dale's coming up. And before I get to Stan, according to the latest research, I don't know how many people have seen this, but 90% of employers, they plan to make enhancing the employees' experience top priority this year. And that's a good idea. After all, a happy workplace is a key to attracting and keeping good employees, great employees, as a matter of fact. Even ask Eric the Tech. Keep me happy. That's what he tells me all the time. And there are a number of ways you can keep employees happy. You know, you can make them feel more valued. They can get their input on different things and offer them more learning opportunities, which I do to Eric the Tech all the time. I try to teach him, but I'm kidding. But I mean, folks, employers, people with small businesses, medium-sized, large, you know what I'm talking about, right? The productivity increases with happy employees. And if you need to add more employees right now to your team, there's ZipRecruiter. Their matching technology helps you find the right people for your roles fast. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. That's H-A-G-M-A-N-N. ZipRecruiter uses its powerful technology to find and match the right candidates up with your job. Then it proactively presents these candidates to you. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site in the U.S. based on G2 ratings. And ZipRecruiter's technology is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter, they get a quality candidate within the first day. I know people have used ZipRecruiter, and they're extremely happy with it. Find the right employees for your workplace with ZipRecruiter. Try for free at this exclusive web address. You got a pen? You listening? ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. H-A-G-M-A-N-N. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Have to adjust the program clock a little bit, but you're good for the next segment, 60 minutes. How you doing, Stan?
You there? Oh, yeah, well, I'm a little frustrated here with my cameras. One of them stopped working for some reason, so I put in this emergency one here. Trying to figure out how to light or darken that screen a bit for you, but I...
You know, Stan, I got to tell you, yesterday I ripped out the cable from the camera that goes to the studio, causing Eric much angst. So,
how did you do that?
Oh, I was moving some stuff and I didn't see a cable and I pulled on it and boy, yeah, things. He was chewing on it.
I was wondering about that, Eric. If he was chewing on it with his new jaw, you know.
I have a bionic jaw. I'm telling you what. My wife turns the microwave on. I pee myself a little bit. I'm kidding.
Zing.
Okay.
But a little bit of what was it? Vegas vacation.
You'll need an EMP shield for your jaw.
Yeah, really. No, it's getting better. I'm starting to be able to move it a little bit more, and it's, I don't cry every time I sneeze, so it's okay. All right, but how you doing? You're looking good.
Oh, okay. Earlier today, Holly went to the Lowe's, you know, Home Depot type thing, and got a bunch of bags of peat moss and things. We're starting to do the gardens, and we discovered with our pH meter that most of our beds are way alkaline, which is not good. I mean, they're pegging the meter like that. So we've been figuring out ways to put, you know, vinegar and peat moss more, mix it in. And it explains why last year we had such weak crops. You know, only the onions survived because they survived in that kind of pH, but the potatoes just fell over dead. Anyway, So we've been unloading and getting ready for that. And tomorrow we'll be doing that. You know, today's been enough of a trial.
I guess. earlier today, I got my fertilizer out my bag, and I shoveled the 4 foot of snow from the ground, and I went to put the peat moss down into the soil.
He was chewing on that too.
I was chewing on that too. Yeah, I'm joking. So you've got pleasant weather there, I guess, right?
A few days anyway, and plenty of firewood. We must have 7 or 8 cords still out the back. But our birds are happy. We rearranged the front door wreath, got a brand new one. It's all colorful and, you know, shiny and flowers and everything, and wrapped up an old t-shirt in there so they can sit in it, and some cotton wads for them to build their nest. And now we've got 2, maybe 3 pairs of finches vying for that one nest. We made others in hanging baskets around, but they all want that one. And I suspect it's because they were born there over the last 3 or 4 years. They seem to come back to where they were born. And so that when you've got 2 or 3 years of babies coming back, naturally they're fighting about, you know, who gets the digs.
Interesting.
Anyway.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right.
And is my level all right there, voice level, Eric?
Yes, it is, he said.
Okay, fine. All right. Well, a few things happened today. Gosh, where do you start? I am sorry for those journalists from Fox that got killed over in Ukraine.
Yeah, I didn't mention anything about that. I mean, sad. So much death. I mean, to me, this whole thing is needless, Stan. You know, this war is so needless, and I believe that the U.S. in large part is behind it. That's just my view. when I say behind it, you know, pushing, I won't get into it. I'll let you talk.
You know, I don't know. It's whose intel do you trust? I think everybody lies.
Everyone does lie. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Oh, my show images page. I have the perfect comment on this.
Okay.
On slide 52, Eric, you will see a picture of Sun Tzu, the Chinese, warrior who wrote a book on how to wage war. And he says, in the practical art of war, the best thing of all is to take the enemy's country whole and intact. To shatter and destroy it is not so good, which, of course, is what Russia's doing. And he also said, all warfare is based on deception. And that's what we're seeing. Everybody is lying to the public and to each other. Deception. Sun Tzu was a wise fellow.
Yeah. But you know, I have a problem with media being used as a propaganda arm. All right. Now, I'm okay with deception to the extent that it's used on the enemy. But I'm not so sure how I feel about the media lying to me about a situation, whether it be domestic or international. I don't know.
It bothers me, but I think about it myself. There are certain things that you don't want to tell the opposition, you're the enemy, that you're talking about. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
There are pros and cons. Pros and cons.
Well, yeah, just shut up about it. You know, I mean, not you, but
yeah.
Don't take a chance either way, you know, or don't lie. I just don't like the lies. The propaganda, when it's directed at the enemy for a specific wartime purpose, I get that. But anyway.
And while we're talking about enemy in Russia and Ukraine and stuff, I want to get to slide 54 quickly here. I'm not sure I understand why this happened, but in the midst of war with Ukraine, Russians gather to burn the Tower of Babel. In the Russian Federation, the Tower of Babel, symbolizing the New World Order, is burned down. Why are they burning down the New World Order? Are they against the Illuminists or what? What does that mean to you?
Yes. To me, okay. Here's what I think, all right? I think that Putin and Trump did have a few things in common. One of the things, greatest things, is they're both nationalists, okay, they're populists as opposed to, wanting this global governance. They want to be independent, or countries independent. So I look at Ukraine as this push toward this greater NATO alliance, and contrary to popular belief by Jen Psaki, now Ukraine is not part of NATO, but this push to ally Ukraine with the European Union against Russia, despite the demographics of Ukraine. So I'm looking at this in a way where Putin is fighting against this globalist agenda. So that, to me, would further signify that he's against this one world, new world, globalist order. Now, I could be wrong, but I don't know.
So these people would be in line with their leader, Putin, in wanting to get rid of the new world order.
Okay, that's the way I read this. Okay, that's the way I interpret it. And again, I'm not a military analyst. I'm just observing things, and I like to think I'm observing things through the lens of biblical prophecy at times and common sense. You know what, Stan? I don't know, but I saw that, and that's kind of what really made me think, at least initially. So,
what
I thought initially.
You know, I haven't read all of Sun Tzu, but, quite a few of the things that he stated about war. And you got to realize that in his day, war consisted of a bunch of troops on horseback or elephant and on the ground with swords and, you know, javelins and whatever. And it didn't include aerial warfare, nukes, and that kind of stuff. So with that in mind, in part of his dissertation on war, and this is what China is following, I'm going to link you to a news article, is when you have enemies facing China, two or more, what you do is pit your enemies against each other, go in and confuse them and let them fight each other until they're depleted, till their weapons of war are broken or gone or whatever. And when there's a mess and they can't defend themselves, either one of them, China should rush in and pick up the pieces and invade both countries and own the whole pie. To that end, slide 53, the war in Ukraine is far from over, but a consensus is forming in Chinese policy circles that one country stands to emerge victorious from the turmoil, China. And if you click on the link to the article in slide 53, it brings it in and gives you more detail about this. I'm going down the page here. Anyway, it is following what Sun Tzu said. The Chinese allegedly helped Russia a bit and then backed off, and which is causing Russia to be weakened in its its conflict with the United States by proxy in Ukraine. But anyway, this article does show you that China is definitely, if not before now, following Sun Tzu's directive. Don't join the fray directly with Russia or United States. Let United States and Russia beat it out and pick up the pieces. And we know from the Hopi prophecy about the United States that China and Russia together will invade the United States. So in this case, if that's true, what happens is that China lets Russia beat the Ukrainians and the U.S.-backed efforts to stop it. And then together they form this attack on the United States. And I think before it's over, that the New World Order will be different than China. It will include China, and it may not include Russia, but the New World Order and the Antichrist will then pick up the pieces again and form this one world, you know, dictatorial government that Daniel speaks of and the Bible speaks of in the book of Revelation. I don't know, but it just seems to be following directly the path that Sun Tzu laid out, several hundred years ago.
Interesting assessment. I do see by the actions of Biden and Blinken and Winken, Blinken and Nod over there, I do see Russia being pushed into the arms of China. I see that the codependency there in some, the enemy of my enemy is my friend or whatever you might want to call that. But especially with the sanctions and the fuel situation. And by the way, I don't know whether you saw this and not, now I'll be quiet after this. It was announced earlier today that Russia. I'm chuckling here. Russia imposes sanctions on, you ready for this? Hunter Biden, Hillary Clinton, and other U.S. officials, in addition to Joe Biden and Anthony Blinken.
Okay. Wow.
You talk about the art of war, you know, maybe why are there no Democrats on there? I don't know. Or Republicans on there. That
Republicans.
Is.
Yeah.
Are they trying to reinforce some sort of alliance, secret alliance? You know, I don't know, but it just struck me as kind of humorous. And no, that's not from the Babylon Bee. So, okay.
You know, when you think about it, people are wanting, Trump to come back in and be a strong leader and deliver us from this mess. But even if he were able to do that, unless he makes a strange, sudden military move to overthrow these people that have taken the White House, if he's waiting on the normal electoral process, are we going to make it to not only November, but to January, when the actual change of government occurs more in favor of the Republicans. That means we have to have almost another, 9 months or so of the bad guys being in charge here. And in 9 months, they could absolutely destroy this country to the point that there's no salvaging. I mean, they're getting close to it now. So holding out for Trump and his people to come and save the country is kind of okay. It's nice, but it's not practical unless something sudden and drastic, you know, non-expected happens. I don't know.
I don't think, you know, to me, I don't think there's been any other person in the Oval Office who has done more damage in this amount of time. Think about this. In the course of 1 month, the equivalent of two NFL football stadiums filled with working age males have come across the southern border. Now, that's an invasion. And there's more to come, and there's more coming. Another 70,000 will be coming here within the next couple of weeks, according to Mexico. So we're being invaded, and no one's talking about our borders, but Ukrainian borders. Hey, let's put that blue and yellow mask on and virtue signal all of this while we're being invaded. It's just crazy to me. That's just my thoughts. So, among other things.
No.
Okay.
No, I agree. And you know, America is going to be turned into a foxhole pretty soon, being invaded everywhere and shot at from everywhere. And as the old adage goes, there are no atheists in a foxhole. So basically, we're going to be seeing a return to the Lord by circumstance. A lot of people are going to say it's probably important that we get on terms with God if he exists, that kind of stuff, because we're about to die. And so it's one way to make a massive sudden revival of the faith here.
Yeah. Thinking about it, that absolutely, that would be the way. Okay.
And I'm sure it's probably happened in Ukraine. I mean, this morning I watched, I'm sure as you did today, the last assault there on Kiev, yes, the capital city there, where they had these just sudden bunch of bombs going off, of rockets, whatever, hitting it, zoom, zoom, boom, boom, boom. It was shaking the table where the TV was, you know, from the explosions.
Yeah.
And it just drove it home that Putin is absolutely trying to do a scorched earth policy with Ukraine, totally level it.
Yeah.
It's hard to conceive.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. But believe me, I'm no Putin fan. I understand the issues, but I'm not a Putin fan. And I'm really not a Zelensky fan either. But, but war's hell. I mean, that's just, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah. You know, in slide 64 at the top of my show images page, it talks about NATO masses 30,000 troops and 50 warships for huge war games on Russia's border, risking Putin's roid rage from his cancer treatment, steroid, byproduct. The exercise includes troops from more than 25 countries from Europe and North America, 200 aircraft and 50 vessels. The largest NATO exercise, which is held just a few miles from the Russian border, was planned long before Moscow's invasion of Ukraine, but its significance has now been heightened. Now, you and I both know that there are long-range plans for any kind of invasion or warfare. I mean, months and years in the preparation. So someone probably figured out in NATO, we better get our acts together, because Putin has been signaling about Ukraine for a couple of years now, and he's going to do it. So we better put our troops into a position where, you know, we can help defend our NATO countries should he go over the mark and get outside of Ukraine. It's raised our nuclear threat level. If you look at the top of the show images page, you'll see it says DEFCON 3. But if you click on that DEFCON 3 and go to, I'll just do it with you. If you go to the DEFCON site, you'll see 3 is the average for the whole planet. But if you go up to the top of the page where it says Europe, in that list of areas, go to Europe and click on that. And you'll see that Europe is at DEF CON 2, red. And that is the same level for the Gulf War start, DEF CON 2. So it is definitely at a point where we can expect shooting to start outside of Ukraine at this point. It's a real threat to us. There you go, DEF CON 2. One more and the bullets and bombs are dropping. So.
Wow. Yeah, it would not surprise me one bit if Russia used a tactical nuke. I don't know. I just go back to this being really kind of a needless. And again, can you believe the information where? If Zelensky agreed not to have Ukraine join NATO and remain neutral, you know, Putin would say fine. And can you believe that? I don't know. I don't know. But to me, this whole thing was needless. And to me, also, it's being pushed by the neocons on both the left and the right, or the warmongers on both sides of the aisle, to me, and the globalists. They want bloodshed. They want war. They want this to happen. And no one in the right mind would want this. But okay. And here we are.
And coupled with this at the moment, I mean, like, he's sick and he's getting cancer treatments, which does affect you mentally and physically. And he's been after this lifelong dream of reconstructing the Soviet Union. You know, getting all those countries that went to the West back into the fold and have the United Soviet Union. And he's running out of time, you know, health-wise. So it's affecting him mentally, I'm sure, the stress of it all, whether he's, you know, tilted otherwise and crazy or whatever. But just the sheer stress of the medicines and the treatment and the shortness of time and his desire to have that on his epitaph that he, you know, got Ukraine back in and the other countries that were part of the Soviet Union. Now, coupled with this, in slide 65, you see that Russia could default on its international debt within days, not weeks, days. Russia has sent the clearest signal yet that it will soon default, the first time it will have failed to meet its foreign debt obligations since the Bolshevik Revolution more than a century ago. So the constraints being put onto him, you know, financially, are starting to hurt. And that must be weighing on him because he needs money to do various things in his war effort and keep peace at home. And there are a lot of people at home that aren't happy with him. I suppose you saw earlier today the Soviet newscaster on the major Soviet television network. She called him out because her parents, one of them is Ukrainian, and they disappeared her. No one knows where she is. She's probably dead. But when you go on national TV as a presenter, you know, well-known, and say this, act against Putin's invasion of Ukraine, that's bravery, but it's also probably suicide. And so there are people like that in Russia that are sacrificing life, limb, and happiness to come and say this is the wrong thing to their leader.
We ever seen this before in modern history where there has been that big of a pushback on what we're seeing in Russia, you know, with the protests and things like that? Have we seen that before?
I can't think of it. It's just unheard of, and it's tantamount. These people that are doing that in Russia, it's tantamount to committing suicide on behalf of the Ukrainian people, and that's got to tell you something. You know, they don't think Putin is right. I'm just hoping his own people will step in and cool him off, you know, retire him somehow.
That would be good. Boy, who'd have thought we'd be longing for the, I don't want to say Cold War days, but close to it, or the 90s. But then again, you know, we've been lied to so much. What's that? Pre-social media would even be a better... but I was reading a book recommended to me by John Moore, Anatoly Galitsyn, New Lies for Old, about essentially about how pretty much everything was fake. The fall of communism, the fall of, you know, the wall fell, for example, but it didn't stop communism, the intent to grow communism. So very interesting. A lot of things to consider, which the last thing I'll say is this. It really gets me. People who are so dogmatic about an issue without doing the research behind it, without knowing the history, without knowing the context of things. It blows my mind how people, like you said, get on social media and say, oh, this is bad. This is horrible. I mean, it is, obviously, visibly. But, dig a little bit deeper than just dig a little bit deeper, that's all.
You know, the Lord said that there would be wars and rumors of wars, and that's certainly where we are. And as we said earlier in the show this evening, that they all lie, both sides and the media. So when you come out with a strong position either way, to me, it's kind of not wise, because as you say, you haven't got the information in front of you, all the truth, and that's what you need to assess the situation. And even then, you're still an observer. You're not participating. And social media is so-so as far as participating. The things that are going to happen at a high level have already been decided.
True.
With the oil crisis like it is, we depend on Saudi oil and to a degree, Russian gas and oil, too, through Venezuela, wherever they're going to go. But the Saudis, if you see in slide 66, they have Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates are divided over choice between U.S. and Russia, which one to support. And remember, the towers went down because of Saudi terrorists. And here we have a terrorist, the prince, the king in the making there, that is a wild man. And we're wanting to have, peace with him so that we can have his oil, and peace with Russia, we can have their oil. This is a not very good place to be in a war, where the resources you need to fight the war are handled and owned and distributed by your enemies.
But don't we have the ability, Stan, don't we have the ability to be energy independent here? I mean, we've got the fields, we've got the... I mean, everything's in place. What happened when Biden came into office? I mean, he revoked permits. He did a lot of things to make us dependent upon foreign oil, right? I mean, or not?
Look, you're assuming that he came in to be a good president and take care of the American people. He came in under the control of Russian and Chinese communists and his whole family. They don't care about the rest of us because they're getting taken care of by the Russians and the Chinese. So, we have the oil reserves, to pump out. And then you've got to refine them. We don't have enough refineries to refine the oil right now. Then he said these oil companies are holding back because he's released the hold on them and they could go drill for oil. But they're not doing it because all you would be doing is stockpiling the oil because you can't refine it. Not enough refineries. From legislation, again, from Biden and his cronies about, right. Environmental health and things like that. So, yeah, we do have enough oil. We have enough oil, to last 100 years. But we're not being able to get to it because of the clowns running the White House. Mm. It's just sad. It could have been so different. We could have made a gradual change to other kinds of propulsion for cars, whether it be hydrogen or electrics or whatever. And certainly I've figured out ways to make electric cars, where you don't even have to recharge the battery. They can run real time from broadcast towers like Tesla developed. And so as long as you're within the receiving radius of this tower, you can get enough electrical energy into your vehicle to run and, take you wherever you want to go. So I agree that we should eventually get off of fossil fuels and stuff, be totally dependent on that. Let's get back to a more clean and renewable fuel source. But electricity seems to be it, not nuclear energy, but electricity. And electricity that we can get from the solar wind, from the sun. It's a clean source, and Moray and Tesla played with it, and Moray developed it, actually. So, yeah, anyway, it takes a while to convert from one propulsion system to another because you got so many cars, vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. But eventually we should do that. But you just can't pull a switch and do it without destroying the country, which, of course, is what is happening. Right. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. And talking about nuclear energy, Bill Gates set up, co-founded a company with China, over in communist China, to develop a new kind of nuclear reactor using molten salt as the thermal fluid to drive the steam and all that kind of stuff. And he did it for them, not for us. And those same types of reactors he's developed for the Chinese are very efficient, more efficient than the existing ones, and they can be used in submarines against us. You know, and so Gatesy is just selling us out again.
Okay. Why? Why? And I know, the folks, I know the answer to that, I guess, but... Jeez. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, really. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's just business, as I said in slide 57. It's just business, says Bill. We, you know, we're selling to make money, you know, to the Chinese. They're as good a customer as anybody else. And so when we lose China and we're taken over, where's his position going to be? Is he going to be a highly placed Politburo person? Will he still be able to hold his money and control? I doubt it. But why would he do that? Why?
Well, he's got no conscience. He's an evil guy. I mean, to me, why else would... Why would you... There's no good reason for me to think of why he would do that outside of the evil intent or the lack of, you know, the lack of loyalty, by the way, even among families and neighbors and in your own circle. It's amazing for me to see this, this divide, this lack of loyalty, the lack of, I don't know. But we're seeing it on a massive scale like this.
I know. You know, on a smaller level, the astronaut, the American astronaut, the last one up on ISS, Band Hai, H-E-I, almost sounds like an Asian name, but anyway, at the end of this month, when the last crew leaves the ISS, the Russians there, I think the three Russians and then him, an American, the Russians have kind of hinted at, played around with words, saying that, you know, your astronaut is up there. He's going to catch a ride back, supposed to catch a ride back with our astronauts, you know, and we may leave him there. We could leave him there. And so it's a veiled threat to hold us, to, you know, hold him hostage, you know, to us. You know, they're saying that threat to us. And I, you know, the astronauts up there, I mean, they're guys that are in constant danger up there in the space station from micrometeorites and various other things, and from things breaking, and it's getting old, and it does need to be replaced. But the Russians then have said, since we started complaining about that comment from, like, NASA made a complaint about it, the Russians say, we service the International Space Station so that it will stay in orbit. If we stop servicing it, because they have, their portion of the space station is, you know, keeping its orbit and controlled spin and that kind of stuff, they could cause the 500-ton space station to fall down into the sea or onto land at their discretion. Now, obviously, they could calculate where they could make it come down, like over the United States or whatever. But these kind of threats are personal to the astronauts, and the astronauts really are, most of them just get along no matter what country they're from. you know, a brotherhood of people that are in a foxhole, in essence, together up there. And their countries are playing this kind of game and threatening. It reminds me of the Hopi prophecies again about a house, a habitation in the sky falling to earth. And you got to wonder if it's a space station that comes down that they saw in their prophecies. With all this jigging around, it could be. Anyway.
Interesting.
I'm impressed with the Ukrainian militia and the Ukrainian civilians who are helping to slow down the Russian invasion and hopefully to stop it. One of the things I thought was really cool is at slide 60, there is a crowd of Ukrainians, you know, civilians that have purchased drones, and they've formed a network of drones, and they're flying up over Russian positions and stuff to tell the Ukrainian soldiers where the bad guys are and what they're doing. So in essence, it's a four-man satellite because it's only a few hundred feet above the deck. But what a clever idea, you know, an innovation to set this crew together like that and, you know, spy on the Russians. I just marvel. There's a video on it. If you click on it, you can go see the video about how they're operating it. And it's something I'd never thought about. But when you're desperate, these measures become really present, you know, are necessary. And in that same line of slides I've got there, there's 58 and 59, which deal with a little sphere, a little ball of technology that the Russians are using in Ukraine. They've used it elsewhere, but they're using it in Ukraine now. And it looks like that little round robot that was in Star Wars, you know, BB-8, where it the little robot rolls. Their version, the Russians' version in the field, doesn't roll. I think they have to sling it to a position they want. But it has microphones that gives them, you know, sound all around and vision, 360-degree vision around wherever it lands so that they can tell what the Ukrainians are doing or any enemy they're facing. As though they were behind the lines, they can see where the weaknesses are and how many people have been wounded and that kind of stuff, how much ammo they've got, and other technology. If you click on the picture to slide 58, click on the picture, Eric, and you'll see that even though they say this is just a thing they toss in, kids are playing with little $120 toys that are balls that are like BB-8, and they've got little drivers that drive the thing around. See those little, the blue and the white discs? Those are drivers to move the ball in this direction or that direction. So if the Russians were to use that, I don't know whether it's possible in that particular thing, they could have a little sphere that would go bouncing along the ground way behind enemy lines and give them, you know, information, tactical information they need to do in the fight. Oh, just how do you know, there's so many new technologies. It's mind blowing what you have to consider if you're in the field, what the enemy's doing, what you're doing. I would hate to be in the military and either as a grunt or as someone trying to plan logical defense or attacks against an enemy. It's just a minefield. It's a minefield of technology that it's, oh, how do you figure it? You know, I don't know how to.
And this is just what we know of, you know?
Oh yeah.
Man. Okay.
I guess you saw that they got Chernobyl, you know, the high voltage line back online so they could distribute power there in Ukraine. And then the Russians hit it again and knocked the line out. You don't want to do that too often with Chernobyl because it may melt down again. And the winds prevailing are going to go toward the east in Ukraine. But the sad part about that for the Russians, it's going to go east on them as well. So they'd be well advised to stop shelling that power plant, or, you know, I guess maybe take it over.
It was my understanding that was decommissioned back in 2000, that plant. But you're saying that plant still provides power?
Yeah. If you look at slide 55, and it says that power has been restored following a Russian attack last week. Now, that power may not be used widely, you know, through Ukraine. I'm not sure. But certainly it's power to keep the the mess contained there so that we don't have another meltdown, because you've got to keep it cool and that kind of stuff, that, that mass down in the ground
right.
from the original Chernobyl explosion. What does that article say, Eric? Let's see here. Well, it says here that the announced that power had been restored following a Russian attack last week that disconnected the site from the electricity grid.
Hmm.
So that would kind of imply that, yeah, it's still being used.
Okay.
In the country. Yeah. All I thought right. I read that, but yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. Hmm. Well, here's a neat thing in slide 49. It's a new kind of drone that runs on electrons. It's it's got wires, grids, and everything. And if you look at the video is about 3 minutes long, and you'll see at Roswell there. I think it was at Roswell there or in Las Vegas. Anyway, they were interviewing the guy that developed the saucer. And Eric, if you go over to that thing, to that video, and go into about 30 seconds into it, you'll see the beginning of him discussing and showing this wingless, propellerless drone. And it's quiet. You might hear a little hiss if it's close, but yeah, you see what you're seeing there. If you go down to about 1:30 in that, and you'll see them flying it in a stadium thing there, like remote control, just like normal drones. And
tell me again, how is that powered?
Well, they're charged wires, charged plates that charge air, and the charged air moves from one electrode to the other. You know, there's a transfer of the air as the electrons move. And so it's something we've known about, but he's made a very efficient form of it. And it's slide at two minutes into the thing, you can see it maneuvering. Yeah, there you are. Fascinating. I mean, it has so many advantages. Before, you could only lift little balsa wood things and with tin foil wrapped around them to distribute the electron flow and things like that. They weren't really practical. This guy has some technological secrets to make it work like this. But I mean, I think it can carry a 2-pound load, as I recall.
Wow.
It'll get better. But they show a number of things on it there. It's good. It's good.
Wow. You go from, I'm still trying to get the hang of a regular drone, which is being used in investigative circles for human trafficking and something like
well,
that.
Well, I'm still playing with my flying saucer thing, utilizing technology and stuff that we did back in Australia. But I've got one that it's fairly quiet as well and can be controlled just like a normal drone, except the whole vehicle encases the powertrain and the propellers are a propeller. And it's a very efficient way to build these things. It can last a lot longer than a normal battery powered drone. Anyway, that's
you've got a flying saucer in your garage, don't you? I believe you.
Well, actually, it's in the workshop, but yeah, it's a small one. It's only about 2.5 feet in diameter, but that's the deal. Yeah.
Well, that's all that's needed for the little guys to get in and out of there. But
no, that's true. I got to leave room for that, don't I? Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you, I'd love to see, folks. Wouldn't you love to see Stan's workshop? I mean, oh man!
I was looking at the workshop the other day. I was looking for something, a nut or a bolt or something. I was looking for over there, and I looked around. I saw there's the lathe room to make the circular models and things on the lathe, and then to coat them with, you know, resin and polish them, and then there's the storage of the controls and things like that. And then there's the earth gravitational test wire that I set up, that group of people, north and south, hemispheres, north and southern hemispheres, to do a test on the twist of the wire when DC currents applied. And, you know, I thought, boy, someone come into this workshop here, they're going to find all kinds of neat stuff and wonder what does this do? Yeah. But can
we strap one of the women of the year to the your UFO?
There you go.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It would be dangerous, yes. Is that a woman? Is it a woman?
Well, yeah, I opened the program up. I don't even know what to say about this stuff anymore, but Pennsylvania, my home state, this is, well, Stan, meet Richard Levine, okay? Well, actually, Rachel Levine. I'm not sure what it is. It's former Secretary of Health in Pennsylvania, been named one of USA Today's Women of the Year. Now, again, what can you say? Because this is Richard Levine, goes by Rachel Levine. How does this work? I don't want to know how this works. Never mind.
Well, you know, we're looking for alien life on the planets. I mean, we don't have to go very far to find alien life on Earth. I mean, that's what it is.
You know, I don't know.
Hey, talking about the electrostatics and things, that little drone, there's another thing I found with the electricity and electrostatics. It's in slide 47. It's a development to make a device that cleans the dust off of your solar panels. I mean, you can lose 7 to 10% of your power just with dust that accumulates on your solar panels. And in the Middle East, because the dust is very prevalent with the dust storms over there in the desert, you can lose half of your power output from your panels just from dust collecting on the solar panel face. So they've developed a way to do it. I mean, like, it takes millions of gallons of water to clean large arrays and stuff a year, just to pour it up there and wash it off, you know, all the different arrays. But they've developed a charged wand type thing, like a charged mop, a flat mop. There you're on the site. And it can run over the top of the solar panels and suck up the dust with electricity and clean the panel. I've wondered about it. You know, I've looked at our panels outside and I thought, boy, you know, we've got the hose and we've got some solvents and stuff that go up there and wipe out all the dust that's collected on the solar panels, so we get full use of them. And I asked people that were installing the solar panels and other, you know, spurts on the subject. They said, "Oh, don't worry about the dust; it doesn't hurt much, you know." But 7 to 8%, I want full use of my solar panels. Anyway, if you got solar panels, figure out ways to be able to keep them clean. Maybe use a leaf blower and get on a ladder and blow them clean as you can, or, you know, waste some water and some solvent, you know, soap and stuff that will clean them off, because you're going to need that power if we have a loss of the grid. Anyway, I thought this is interesting for our purposes, and I would share that with you folks.
Look, folks, if you're watching that, there's a great video of this actually working. Wow, look at that.
Just sucks it up like a magnet.
Yeah.
Wow. It wouldn't score the surface of the panels. A lot of the panels have got pretty tough, you know, outer glass or plastic, whatever they use for protecting the solar cells. But, you know, they're supposed to be hail-proof and things like that. But still, they can be scratched if you're not careful when you're wipe it clean with a solvent or a brush. Anyway, that's consider if you've got solar power. You know, when I went over to Tanzania and discovered the Garden of Eden, or went over to see it after I discovered it, I met with a number of Maasai in the process. And in slide 50, I am reporting here that more than 80,000 Maasai pastoralists, you know, they raise cattle there in Tanzania in the Ngoro district, which is a protected district, you know, by UNESCO, but they're being moved off of the land. You know, their herds are growing, their population is growing, and, you know, the Maasai themselves, and they're going to clean the land and kill the Ngoro plateau as far as the vegetation that's there, if we don't move them on. And the the Datoga tribe that used to live there for thousands of years. So they're about 100 miles from there, south, almost directly south and a little bit to the west of the Ngurho crater. So they're probably going to have to move. And, you know, our team visited the Datoga as well. And every day, if they're going to eat, they've got to go out and find game to shoot with a bow and arrow and bring it home and feed the tribe. And the tribe for the Datoga is small, but the Maasai, on the other hand, there are a lot of them, and they need ground, and they need a replenishing type foods source for the cattle. And understandably, they're a bit upset with the government trying to move them on, but it's because they're depleting the resources themselves, and they do have to be moved on. And so, they're not Ukrainian, but they're, you know, 80,000 people that are going to have to move home. And with them, it's a matter of building a new, you know, mud and dung hut with straw somewhere and finding, you know, a place for their cattle. But it's still going to be, you know, uncomfortable and unsettling for them. So that's the problem they've got there in the Garden of Eden area. Yeah.
Not really a Garden of Eden for them, I guess.
No. No. Hmm. Interesting thing here in the United States, slide 43. A breakthrough 2018 study revealed a new supervolcano may be brewing beneath the U.S. states of Massachusetts, Vermont, and New Hampshire. You know, there are about 20 known supervolcanoes on Earth. We've talked about a number of them, like Taupo, New Zealand, and Yellowstone. But this is in the New England states. If you click on the picture there for slide 43, I put the arrows on those three states where the supercomputer is pushing up underneath those states. And it may take years, you know, maybe decades before it becomes a supercomputer. But it's interesting to note that the New England states aren't all that safe from, you know, volcanic eruption eventually. And
wow, okay.
So you know the. Sorry, go on.
So I'm looking at this map, and I've traveled extensively in upstate New York. So where is this in that area exactly?
Well, I put the arrows pointing to it. It's okay. Massachusetts, Vermont, and New Hampshire, right there in that little cluster where the red arrows are.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm my mistake. I'm looking at the actual. I thought the arrow was a dot. It's a very very small on my preview monitor. I gotcha. Okay.
Gotcha. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Those three states are clustered together there over the top of this rising dome of magma. That's something you never think about over on that side of the country. But I guess if it's not New Madrid, it's the supercomputer under those states. Pick your poison.
Wow. All right.
The sun, I want to get to this for sure. In slide 38, you know, I've been telling you that the sunspot, and click on the graph at the picture rather than the article to start with. I told you that this solar cycle 25 was not behaving properly. It was showing more activity way earlier.
Yep.
And if you look at the graph here, the red line is the modified estimate of the peak of this solar cycle. Is going to come earlier in 2024 rather than in 2025, 26. And it's going to be higher. The sunspot count is going to be higher, but I guarantee you the sunspot active region is going to be higher too. The number of CMEs and flares and stuff, it's already increasing. And they've shifted to the blue line was the original forecast, and then the red basically is the new one. And you can see there that the green, which is actual, there at 2022, where the green stops, it's already starting to exceed the revised red thing for this. And, you know, as I've said many times, we base forecasts of weather and, you know, of things that will happen in physics. We base our forecasts on the information we've had that's occurred before in similar situations. You know, based on the logic of the past or the occurrences of the past, we extrapolate, they say it will always be that way in the future, unless something changes, of course. And the Latin for it is post hoc ergo propter hoc. It's as it's happened before, it will happen again. And so you base your science on that. And then suddenly here we see that's not the case right now, because unless something is happening on the sun, and it's affecting our weather, our geology, earthquakes, volcanoes, the core of our planet, its rotation, and big lumps are forming under the mantle of the Earth in the magma. And I saw up in slide 42 where Madagascar off the coast of northeast Africa has had in the last 2 months 4 hurricanes. Actually, it's in a month. And it might get one hurricane in a month during cyclone season, but the Indian Ocean is now creating more cyclones, more hurricanes in that area than ever before. Why? Is it the sun? I think it is. And we're also having changes, in my opinion, from what I've been able to measure myself, in the tilt of the crust of the Earth by about 3 degrees. This is putting stresses on the tectonic plates. And it's, creating volcanoes and earthquakes in areas where not before. So it's warming the water in areas where it hasn't before. As I've said, we're going to see from this solar cycle areas of heating and drought where they haven't been for hundreds of years. And cold and bitter cold and flooding. All these things are happening. And this is just another example here in Madagascar of all these cyclones hitting them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, just back to the sun, if I can ask you this question. That graph that you showed, it looked like back around 2000 in that time period, in that cycle, it was higher. The number was higher than the projected for now. You see what I mean?
Yeah. And that's lower in 2000. That's lower than we had in earlier sunspot cycles.
Okay.
And so you say, well, okay, so big deal. I stress again that sunspot counts count the number of spots. They don't count the area of the spots. You can have you can have one big sunspot and you say, oh, we got one, that's not bad. But it could be a thing that opens up a hole big enough to swallow Earth 20 times. So you've got to look at the underlying conditions, which can create these flares and CMEs. Look at in slide 40 where you see C movie, click here. If you look at that movie, it's from the last 2 days, well, actually 24 hours, I think, if not that much, but it's showing this flare between two large sunspot areas on the northern part of the sun. So, 2 weeks ago, we had solar flares erupt 2.5 million miles out from the sun. And that's like 3 times the diameter of the sun. So these things are becoming stronger, punching out there further. And when it punches out there further in our direction, that's not good. That's why you need the EMP shields and things like that.
And there you go. Well, you need
to prepare for grid loss. I mean, it's coming. And look, how much time we got left?
We have about a minute and a half.
Well, right. You can look more on the sun in slide 37. Click on the green thing, which shows what's coming, and what will be here in about 3 weeks as well. But for, so many things. For fun, look at slide 41 in the video, and you see it's only about 3-4 minutes of it, as I recall, but it shows this clever Indian inventor in Asia, India, who has made a kind of a gray plastic thing that will click onto down near any bike and immediately turn it into an electric powered bike that will run, 40 kilometers or something like that between charges. And I laughed because he was showing, well, it was waterproof. He did that after he set it on fire. He threw the fire on it. He says it's fireproof. It won't burn the new gadget. But while he was making the movie, the gasoline he put on it and lit, part of it dropped onto his rubber tire there, which, I don't think the rubber tire is fireproof, but anyway, it was a way to make his point. And it would be great to have one of those over here to play with too. So
ingenuity. And I'll bet you if I dug around your workshop, I'd find something very similar to that. Stan, thank you so very much. EMPShield.com, promo code Hagman, and Dare to Prepare, too. Dare to Prepare, you got to get that book as well as Cosmic Conspiracy, and make sure you support Stan by way of his Patreon, StanDeo.com. Stan, thank you so very much.